Good afternoon. Today is Monday, February the 4th, 35th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon is Eureka Police Chief Merle Harpham. Hey, guy.
Hi.
Quiet weekend, huh?
Well, yes. It was a quiet weekend. But
what does it mean, well, yes?
Well, it was a black weekend for me.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. Oh, we'll talk a little bit about things other than the blackness of the weekend.
Yeah, right.
Including we'll get Merle's comments about the situation that just ended in the last about
half hour-ish.
Yeah. With the standoff. And it's been the lead news story. We'll talk about how EPD would have done it when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Redwood Information Capital Times, 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Merle Harpham, but before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from W. Somerset Maugham. Sometime between 1874 and 1965, was known to have said, quote, "The trouble with our younger writers is that they're all in their 60s.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. So, what are you, Government Employee of the Year? Is that what the chamber?
You have to bring that up. Huh?
Yeah. Well, I figure a little embarrassment before we got in everything else. Surprise to you?
Yes, it was.
A nice surprise?
It was. Oh, yeah, it was nice, but, you know, those things are always embarrassing for me.
Well, that's probably why they choose you then.
Yeah, maybe. And then you get up and have to say something, and I was unprepared to, you know, to say anything.
that's one that's named after Tom Cook, right?
Right.
That's pretty cool.
It was nice.
Did you have a chance to know Tom at all?
No, not really.
I met him on a jury.
Oh.
And then after that, I realized he was somebody. He realized that I was nobody.
Yeah.
And we got along pretty good after that. But it was, nice guy.
Yeah.
Seemed to have his act together. So I would presume that it was probably taken with the sincerity that it was given. So what did you tell them that you wish you wouldn't have?
I really didn't say much other than I just said that I can't, I'm unprepared to say anything. I'm shocked by this, overwhelmed. And I says, and besides that, it's getting close to the mayor's bedtime. And so I'll cut this short.
Well, good. That probably got a little giggle out of everybody.
And yeah, it did. Yeah.
You have to wake Frank up in order to let him know you just talked about him.
Well, I was sitting next to him during the evening. So. Yeah.
Well, that's got to be kind of fun every once in a while to be recognized outside the circle, outside the badges that you're doing an okay job.
Okay. All right.
You're not going with that, huh? Should I have been there as your official spokesperson?
That would have been nice.
And stood up. Well, I'm only a phone call away.
Yeah, right.
All right. Well, let's move on. You mentioned the weekend. I know that there was a lot of concern, a lot of emphasis, and a lot of scheduling in anticipation of you can't be over inebriated, can you? Overuse of alcohol and other substances in association with that black hole event thing you were referencing. Did that seem to back people down?
No. Those were depressed people, and so they're, go home and...
So they weren't throwing a back hard in the fourth quarter, is that what you're saying? Yeah,
exactly, yeah.
When you guys do that, and I know Fortuna PD, Arcata was, CHP was, Oregon was, Delnort, Humboldt County were, when everybody's out in more presence... Cumulatively, does that tend to get people not to imbibe, or are those nice so that you guys are out there instead of driving 10 miles ripped, they drive half a mile and you guys pick them off?
Well, a lot of the people, that's a home event anymore. They have parties at home, and I don't think it's as popular as it was years ago to go sit in the bar and watch it. You see a lot more home parties.
So you guys didn't see much of a spike at all in arrests yesterday?
No.
Or citations?
No.
It was interesting for me. Dan has been kind of following the amount of DUI arrests. And I don't know if it's been higher the last couple of months in conjunction with some of the fatals, the rollovers, some of those challenges, or if he's just cognizant of what the number is. But it seems to be a surprisingly high figure. Are you seeing a trend that's going up?
Well, you know, I'd have to look at what our stats show, but flying from the seat of my pants, you know, what causes the thing to focus on that was when you have some accidents that are really horrific. Then it tends to bring everybody's attention to it, and they get the picture that, you know, there's an awful lot of it going on, and that may not be the case.
A lot of times it's a realization of what's going on.
Right.
Kind of like when we went through, when was the first significant effort at domestic or spousal abuse? 70s, early 80s?
Probably,
when all
yeah.
of a sudden, yeah. and it seemed like everybody was engaged or their neighbor was, if it wasn't them, in some form of domestic abuse?
Yeah, well kind of what happened there was we were given the power to arrest people in domestic situations where we did not witness the actual crime. Prior to that, when I started, you know, you'd go to a domestic violence and you'd ask the party, one of the spouses, whoever was abused, if they wanted to arrest them, make a citizen's arrest, because it was a crime not committed in an officer's presence. So we could not make the arrest. We had to try to convince the person. And so what we ended up doing, in most cases, they didn't want to. And so we'd convince one of the parties to leave the house, go to a motel, go to a family, something like that. Well, that changed. I don't know exactly what year, but it changed when basically it was, the law was written that officers are obligated to arrest somebody if they see that a person has been abused by, you know, bloody lip, black eye, complain of pain to the stomach even. Things like that, then...
So the responsibility shifted onto you guys.
Right, yeah, and which made it easy for us, I mean, which we welcomed because it was very frustrating for us to walk. I mean, you know, I remember like, you know, Christmas Eve going to a spousal abuse situation where the guy spent too many hours Christmas Eve in the bar and came home, and the wife said something. He grabbed the, here's what I think of Christmas, and he tipped the table over with all the turkey and trimmings on it, and she didn't want to press charges, and we had to walk away, and the kids are over crying.
In some nasty situations.
Yes.
KINS, News and Information Times, 319.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you have a dog or plan to add one to your family, you'll want to know about the Humboldt Dog Obedience Group, or HumDog for short. HumDog, a nonprofit organization, began in 1978 and is run by 50 volunteers. Its purpose is to teach dogs good citizenship. HumDog conducts classes nearly every Monday evening throughout the year at Redwood Acres. There are puppy training classes, basic training for dogs over 6 months old, and more advanced classes. The modest fees are used to pay the rent and professional trainers. Each session lasts an hour. HumDog also puts on two annual events, the Dog Expo in March and the Dog Agility Trial in August. Both draw crowds of dog lovers. For those who apply for funds to spare or neuter their dog, HumDog has a special fund that may be able to help. See their website, www.humdog.org. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Merle Harpham. Merle, so there are a bunch of different situations, I know, where you guys come in, the cops, and you may not be the lead contact, but you're certainly there, you're part of it. This fire that was down on Broadway, the tail end of last week.
Right.
Normally, you know, when we hear fire and it's not, I hate to say a normal, but let's just say a fire, the smoke alarm goes off, sprinkles, it's over, it's done, no big deal. But normally when there's a news release associated with it, historically, we think of things like somebody's lab blew up, right. things of that, you know, the meth labs overheating right. with the indoor grows, et cetera, et cetera. This one that was on Broadway, was there an overtone of drug at all involved?
No, we've hit that place a lot of times and arrested people, but they're mainly just users. They're not into, you know, manufacturing anything or even growing anything there. No, it was more of unauthorized guest breaking into a room where all the electrical equipment was and used a candle for lighting because all the lights were leaving that room, not lighting it. And so it appears that that's where the fire started, was in the electrical storage room.
Some of those types of news stories that we have heard over the years, though, do they seem to be less now? I mean, we were talking about DUIs being more.
Yeah.
The drug labs, are there less of them now? Or is it becoming more routine so you guys aren't bothering with reports?
No. No, those things are going to be looked at very seriously. And it's pretty hard to have a lab of any size in an incorporated area. You know, that's more designed for being outdoor because there's an odor that is connected to it that people, you know, get, and it's pungent, so they call and complain about it.
What does it smell like? I mean,
rotten eggs.
Oh, so it's a sulfur, yeah, sulfuric kind of a...
Yeah.
Okay.
So a skunk smell also, I've had people describe it as smelling like a skunk had been walking.
You know, if I
area.
Called you guys every time I heard or smelled a skunk in the neighborhood.
Well, you're out in the country, though.
Oh, yeah. 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 We have to watch for the cows crossing on Booner. So there is something that is pretty aromatic about it.
Right.
Or aromatic, I guess. So we just don't see that many of those types of situations anymore?
No.
It's more the grow house that's the...
The grow house is more the problem, and they're the ones that are having the fires and things like that. But the meth labs are going to be out in the country probably, and they make up a lot of it is imported in here. It's made in Mexico and comes in here. They're even it's coming in liquid form now too.
Really?
Yeah.
So you just
disguised
drink it?
In bottled. Oh no, you don't drink it. No, but it's disguised. They produce the meth from that once they get the possession of the.
Oh, so that's the
pre-processed
substance.
Right. They put it in like tequila bottles or beer bottles and things like that. Try to disguise it that way. And it could be very dangerous, you know.
Some of you think
you're going to take a swig of a shot of tequila and it's a surprise.
So it's a concentrated form?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I thought that stuff was relatively inexpensive to produce.
It is, and that's another problem with right now with the making of it is in California, they have some pretty strict laws on reporting people who are buying the ingredients.
So there are still some pretty key ones that are abnormal
right.
for somebody to buy?
Right.
So if I bought 25 pounds of rat poison, nobody believed that was for the barn out in the boonies that you referenced where I'm living. Fair enough. And the same still is in place for the ingredients for the bombs and the incendiary devices and things of that nature also.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you guys have a list of those types of things, or does the retailer need to have a list of those and be cognizant of that kind of stuff legally?
Well, yes, they know. They know the things that they can't sell.
Or if they sell.
Or if they do, it's all documented. Person has to sign for it, produce ID.
Oh, really? So it's much more
controlled.
Informal.
Right.
Is what I was saying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's got to be a little bit of a surprise for somebody, huh? That is buying it.
Oh, they know.
For regular reasons. Normals, not the abnormal.
Well, yeah. I mean,
I got to sign this for what?
Yeah. Depends on how much you're buying.
It's more of a volume issue than it is what the substance is itself.
Exactly.
Okay. It's a really big barn.
Yeah.
Is that law continuing to evolve and to change? Are there more substances getting put on?
Yes. In fact, they're dealing with one right now. It's called bath salts. And the legislature is developing laws right now to deal with that because it's legal right now. So
it seems as if there's a will, there's a way. Huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, some of these people, they'd shoot bubblegum if they thought they'd get high on it.
No, chew the bubblegum.
Yeah, right.
That's always been my experience. Chew the bubblegum. Yeah. Just don't put it underneath the pews. In church. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:30. We'll be back with yet even more from Merle Harpum.
This is Fred Van Fleck, Eureka City School Superintendent. Exciting new things are happening in our district next year. Reducing our kinder through third grade class size to 23-1. Eliminating our combination classes in the reopening of Winship Middle School. Remember, we are the largest district on the North Coast, allowing us to have the most diverse course in extracurricular offerings. Enrollment is happening now. Please stop by the district office across from Eureka High School or visit the website at eurekacityschools.org.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:37. Wow. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Merle Harpum. Well, I was just having too much fun talking to you, I guess. Probably okay. Should have done it in here so we could talk with everybody else. Merle, some of the different challenges we heard during the news update about the news situation, the standoff, FBI coming in, guns, kidnapping, all that kind of stuff. Are local law enforcement entities designed to handle those situations, or is that when you bring in the big boys?
No, we practice that all the time. We practice those situations. We have a combined sheriff's office and EPD SWAT team, and they work together, they train together, and they respond to these situations. We've had, fortunately, we haven't had one like this where we've got a kid as a hostage, but we've had a few situations. Usually they're barricaded suspects.
I would imagine if somebody was digging out one of these trailers or a hole for a trailer or one of these storage units, that would be a pretty good indication for somebody somewhere to say,
yeah,
huh?
Right.
Particularly if it's somebody who is perceived to be a little off balance.
Yeah.
Do you guys welcome people calling if they see something or if the neighbor or the neighbor kid is acting just
absolutely,
just we, always seems fact, to be a little off.
Yeah. No, absolutely. We have to rely on citizens. We can't be every place at every minute. So we rely on citizens to contact us on things just like that. It's just like, you know, Homeland Security is pushing for people to call on suspicious people, their actions, packages, you know. Photographing sensitive areas, perhaps, you know, having a great interest in something that could be considered a sensitive target.
What would those areas be in our area?
In our area.
I mean, the nuclear plant now has kind of been remodeled and cleaned up. And
yeah,
it's not quite the same.
Right. And it would take, I mean, you know, I'm told that they've got that stuff so buried so deep and so the concrete is so thick and it's down so far that a huge airliner loaded with explosives isn't going to get to it.
All right, so we can cross that one off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's several things that you know, the things that come to my mind is things like what would happen if terrorists went into mid-America and killed a bunch of kids in school like happened back east. I mean, because it was, I mean, this was a single person that was a crackpot, but if terrorists did this, you know, a group of guys with weapons and whatnot go into schools and start killing kids, what would that do to this country's psyche? I mean, we don't have enough soldiers or policemen to put in every school to protect them. And so that would be, you know, that's.
So you're thinking along those lines rather than somebody coming here and taking over a commercial district or a business or something.
They could cut down, they could cut off our power. And we're kind of isolated up here anyhow. And there's places that they could hit our power systems and shut down our computers and, everything that we come to accept as part of the day.
But around here, that's not going to get any traction.
No, but it would be, yeah, it wouldn't get the national attention that if they did it in some place like, that shut down Chicago or New York or...
Yeah, someplace that's a little bit larger.
Yeah.
Or has more media, perhaps.
And, like our we have a gas storage unit and oil storage units here on the bay, and, they're going to have one big fire, but it's not going to be a big event on the wide scope of things. It'll affect us, but it isn't going to affect anybody else.
So when you and the joint group get together, do you practice certain facilities? Do you know the ones that to be most apt to be the targets?
Yes, they do, and they have floor plans of the places, like the schools. They have floor plans for all the schools. They practice on the active shooter type thing. Ever since Columbine, they went from sitting there waiting for the officers that arrive first on the scene,
control
the scene till the SWAT guys get there. Now, all our officers are trained what to do in those situations, and if an active shooter, you go in.
See you guys inside.
Paid for.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems to be a little bit more pragmatic in an approach.
Yeah, and it's kind of, it takes me back, when I started in this business, that's the way it was handled. Two cops went in and took a guy off with a gun. Now they set up a perimeter and, call in the SWAT team. And so we're back to the way we did it years ago.
Well, perhaps police science is a circular.
Yeah.
KINS, News and Information Times. 3:44, we'll be back with more from Earl Harpham.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:46. We're back to talk with Merle Harpham this afternoon. Merle, when Mike Downey was in a couple of weeks ago, we talked to him about gun control and some of these proposed legislation that's coming out. I know California already has the most stringent weapons law. Gun laws in the country. Do you think they need to get any tougher to make your job easier, or do you go with the other side where having every citizen with a gun helps to keep the criminal element from taking advantage of situations?
The first thing is, I don't like to see the Constitution trampled on, but I also, in the back of my mind, question, is there a need for some of these weapons? There's only one use for them. Either just go out and play with them. You can't hunt with them. And, of course, one of the big arguments is that it's hunting. But I don't know that it's going to really do all that much good, because you got there are more people killed with knives and clubs, just clubs and blunt instruments than there are with rifles. Every year. I mean, this is from the FBI statistics. So the rifles aren't that huge a problem. The handguns are, they're very popular and well used. And you take places like Chicago, Utah, the whole state of Utah, the population is about 200,000 more than the city of Chicago. But the deaths by handguns in Chicago is 10 times that in Utah. And Chicago has very strict gun laws, and Utah has very lenient gun laws.
So perhaps there's other things that work there,
like drugs?
Yes, there's
a lot of other things going on there.
Frustrated Cub fans?
Right.
No.
Yeah, I'm one of those.
Are you a Cub fan?
I'm a Giant fan, but I was first, before the Giants moved out to the West Coast, I was a Cub fan because I grew up in Chicago until the seventh grade.
Still waiting.
Yeah, I'm still
waiting.
I remember they were in the 1945 World Series, and they lost to Detroit.
Didn't quite make that one delivered to goods, did they?
No.
Are you in favor of the waiting time for gun ownership?
Yes, I think that's why. You know, here's a problem. I just got this from the Department of Justice. There are 39,000 handguns in this, well, I should say guns, excluding the AKs. There's 1,200 of those that are out there in the hands of people that should not have weapons. 39,000, well, you add, that's over 40,000, and they're in hands of people that are not entitled to have guns. They have been convicted of a crime, or they've been arrested for spousal abuse or assaults and things like that. And but the problem is they don't have enough agents in the state. And they figured it costs $25 million to go out and try and find some of these weapons.
That's the figure that I've heard is that there's over 20,000 handgun laws on the books. Last year, 44 people were arrested.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
it's the enforcement part. It's right. Not more laws necessarily.
Yeah. And so they can't round up these people. They can't go into their homes without probable cause to search to see if they have them. They go up the door and say, do you still have a weapon, that 38 that's registered to you?
Yeah, that's probably not the wisest thing to do. Thanks for coming by, Merle.
Okay.
We've been talking shop with Merle Harpham. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.